My name is Ryan Luke Winslade, and I am a PK and middle child. I know what it's like to be a misfit, an oddball, a weirdo, but I'm okay with that. If you're like me, you are most certainly welcome. Even if you're not, you'll hopefully enjoy yourself here on Pastor's Middle Kid anyway. We'll talk about stuff and look at things a little differently. All right, let's get started. Good morning, afternoon, or evening, and welcome to the best 50 or so minutes of your day. That's right, Pastor's Middle Kid, Ryan Luke here. This week on the show, I have my good mate Jordan Smith returning for his fifth round, I believe, of PMK. Hopefully this is at least your fifth round of PMK. If it isn't, then please go back and listen to some of the previous episodes. Hopefully you'll be able to get past the five mark as well sometime soon. Great. Well, I would also love to hear your feedback on anything you hear in this podcast today. So hit me up on Facebook, facebook.com/pastorsmiddlekid, or on Twitter @PMKpodcast, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can sift through all the traffic because I'm anticipating a lot of feedback. All right. Well, this week I've continued reading Monster by Frank Peretti. Surprise, I haven't gotten through it yet, but it's a lot of fun and I'm getting really into it. There's finally some action happening. I've also been listening to the album Lowborn by Anne Boleyn, which came out last year. It was their final release as a band. Now, because Anne Boleyn didn't tour to support Lowborn, the album, I don't know of many people that actually really know this album very well. What I have playing underneath this right now is the song Hearing Voices from Anne Boleyn's release Lowborn from 2015. And what I'll have at the end of this podcast is Velvet Covered Brick, which I really like from that album. Keep an ear out for that, and I look forward to having you listen to the rest of this podcast. Great. Peace out. Have fun. Jordan Smith joins me right now, everybody. He is one of the most frequent guests on Pastor's Middle Kid.
Hi, how you going?
And this is actually his first time being the only guest on Pastor's Middle Kid.
Yay!
In the past, I have had him joining people such as Kayla Norris and also featuring on the short E Street episode that we had in the awkward discussion about feminism way back in the beginning.
If you listen to all of that, good on you. Well done.
Yeah. We give you mad props, as they say these days. Anyway, if you hear some background noises, we just want to paint a bit of a picture for you so you know exactly where we are, and it could really help you understand some of these noises that you hear around us. Picture a deserted highway that is going through the middle of a jungle. We find ourselves in the rooftop of this jungle that is strangely absent of birds.
I believe that's called the canopy, but...
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's a rainforest lesson, everybody. The canopy of the jungle.
I know my magic school bus.
And around us, we have actually a live audience of about... How many would you say? 23?
Yeah, 23.
Various apes of shapes.
Yeah, one
and sizes.
Keeps getting up and leaving, so keeps going up and down.
But luckily, we have a pretty good filter. We can mask that. sound of their constant chattering. But yeah, that should give you a bit of an understanding. If you hear rustling leaves, any cars going past, any ape noises, that should explain a few things. All right, so Jordan, I have you on to talk about a few things that we decided about 4 minutes ago.
Yeah, I've been mulling on them for a while.
That's right. some pretty in-depth preparation happening here in the studio, folks. And by studio, I mean in the canopy of the jungle next to the abandoned highway.
Yeah.
The first thing we're going to talk about is tradition in churches. I know there are a lot of people that have understanding of what tradition means, and they vary from person to person. I have some friends, I don't know if they listen to this show or not, but they've grown up in the Russian Orthodox Church. So ooh, tradition cool. means something really different to them, to what it does to a modern Pentecostal who says, if you have pews and an organ, you're a traditional church. they're like, try having your traditions go back 1,500 years, and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
It was funny, I was actually talking to one of these guys in Canberra a number of weeks ago, and he said, when I mentioned the Protestant church talking about from Martin Luther onwards, so branching off from the Catholic Church, he made an interesting remark that kind of made me think, in that within the Orthodox Church, they tend to mark the Great Schism, or the Great Schism, depending on your pronunciation, of 1054, I think, when the Roman Catholic Church went off and the Orthodox Church went off the other way.
Oh, so that's their big...
That's their Protestant.
So they would consider Catholics Protestant?
That's right. That's right. So they consider...
So Protestants are Protestants.
Yes.
Protesting about protesting.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Yeah, so what we're going to talk about is from our experience, which is mostly within the Protestant Church. And so we are talking about things like liturgy and pews and pipe organs and hymns and...
Stained glass windows.
Grey hair. Not that's necessarily a tradition, but I guess as far as humanity is concerned, grey hair is a bit of a tradition.
It seems to catch.
It's a recurring theme. So let's dive into our experiences with tradition in churches these days.
I was in the same church my whole life growing up. Mm-hmm. With what my family moved to Australia from New Zealand when I was five, which is in 1999, and they pretty much, after a month or two, joined a church, a Baptist church, in a city called Wodonga, and mm-hmm. we've been with that church ever since. And I mean, I haven't lived at home for like 2 years, but I still consider that my home church. It was a great church to grow up in. It was definitely not what we would consider, I guess, in our Australian frame of mind, a traditional church. It was a bit more, you know, they're free, they're out there. It's not a very charismatic church, mm-hmm. but like the whole time I've been there, they had a band, and they didn't have much of that traditional liturgy ideas that like the other more traditional churches had. But
so would you say it was more of like a modern conservative?
Yeah, that's a good description, mm-hmm. but not like heavily conservative. Like, you know, there's a bit of freedom. And over the years, more hand-raising, but...
Yeah, I see. Okay.
It's interesting.
And something to point out here, too, is that Baptist in Australia means something different to Baptist in America, particularly in regards to the Southern Baptist. That is not what we have here.
No.
I've attended a Baptist church or two in my time. Just briefly, I might go for a visit or an occasional evening service, and the evening services tend to be the more youth-friendly ones and all that. So, yeah, that's understandable. But even when I attended a Baptist church, I found that there was still quite a lot of structure.
It's definitely structured, yeah.
Yeah, it felt like there was quite an emphasis on having things go a certain way, having it fairly rigid, and that was kind of the way they did it.
Yeah.
Would you say that's been your experience as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's cool. It's quite, yeah, ordered in how it is. I was just thinking, okay, where would you fit them in the frame of all the different churches? And I would say that our Baptist church tend to be between a more charismatic Pentecostal church and a church more like a Uniting Church or a Lutheran church or something. So they're like in the middle, so they're more of a neutral thing. And so it's like, oh, we want to have some more modern songs, but we also do want to, you know, keep a bit of tradition. There's a lot of grey heads in the church and stuff. So yeah, you know, I think the main thing I can think of is that we have a format. You know, you have two songs, announcements, two songs, message, one song. Like, that was the format that you pretty much didn't go away from. That within that, there was, you know, if it wasn't like the presentation of the service was quite free to be dynamic and to change and to let's do announcements this way or whatever, but it was almost always in that 2-2-1 format.
Yeah.
It sounds like a football team.
Yeah, it sounds like a formation.
2-2-1, don't disobey the 2-2-1.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, cool. Would you say that even as far as the music is concerned, yes, having more modern songs and things, but would you find the occasional golden oldie that was thrown in there and done in a more modern way?
Dude, the golden oldies were the thing. Like, I mean, it really depends on the worship leaders to an extent too. And like, in my church, you get a lot of the worship leaders are like the middle-aged women that are great, love them, you know, great women of God that have a strong sense of worship and songs. But you know, it's the 90s Hillsong, and then they'll chuck in hymns. So it was normally the one hymn each week. Like, there's one hymn and it was moved around a bit. Normally it's one hymn. Sometimes we put a like a really strong, like, okay, pianist, you lead this, or whatever. But sometimes we're like, yeah, well, let's wrap this up. We often used to do How Great Thou Art. There was a version that an artist called Paul Beloche, he wrote arranged a version of it. And it was quite upbeat, and we used to play that in night church a lot because it was like a hymn, but it was like, let's do this part. It's kind of cool. But then all the old Hillsong stuff, like, they used to be super into like all the Stones Being Rolled Away and that stuff. But that went away like mid to late 2000s. That sort of departed, and it was more like it became things like, oh, what was
Chris
that song?
Tomlin.
Yeah, the Chris Tomlin ones. I was just thinking,
Reuben
there's
Morgan.
There's a Hillsong. I think it's a Reuben Morgan song. It's like, I don't quite remember right now, but there was those songs that like, oh, she's leading, she's probably going to do one of these songs.
Yeah.
Invariably it would be like, yeah,
yeah,
yay, this song.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
that's cool. And then Mighty to Save, come on. So there's tradition, and I like that because it's like a something comfortable, like, oh, this is familiar.
Yeah, like, you wouldn't say though that the tradition has been outside of the structure of the service, that there's really any tradition that has been there for more than 50 years though.
Definitely not. The church is the way we grew up in. The church is, I believe it's about 50 years old, around there. Might be a bit older than 50 years. Well, actually, it could be closing
kind of
into 50 years, our church. So I'm talking about the age of the church itself.
Okay.
The people in it, attendees were probably... they're probably most in their 60s and 70s now, and then there's a bunch of families and stuff. It's a big church for families, but the church itself is probably just over 50 years, so yeah, you don't have a massive...
yeah.
It's not this well of tradition to pull
it's
from.
It's still in the infant's developing stage.
Especially when you consider the churches of Europe and Eastern Europe. And
yeah, yeah. I love the Orthodox church. I think it's really beautiful. For me, I grew up in Uniting Churches, and... Uniting Churches, typically, if they are the more modern ones, they, at least in my experience, and all of that was under my dad, we wouldn't sing songs that were more modern than 2005. And most of them were from the 80s and 90s Hillsong stuff.
Yeah.
And so we sang a lot of Graham Kendrick and all that, and it was a lot of fun. We'd always have some hymns, though, and we'd
belt those out.
Yeah, I mean, we'd have guitars, we'd have drums. Eventually, when the kids in my family got old enough, we started having a a quote-unquote church band type of feel.
But which was the pastor's kids playing the music.
Yeah, exactly. It was the minister's family on all the instruments. That's exactly it.
We made all the old people just... their hearts.
That's right.
They're going, this is really great.
The Winslades are up there again.
So great to see young people involved in church these days.
That's right. I'm in here because I have to be. but that was usually the family service that we attended. I actually don't know if I ever attended an 8 o'clock or an 8:30 service at any of the churches we went to. I mean, that was only hymns, always an organ, the wooden pews, and...
Well, the wooden pews... Oh, that was interesting. Anyway, the wooden pews, did they disappear for the family service?
No, it was in a different building.
Oh, different
always in a different building. Yeah, that's right. We also had some really, really strong stewards that would just pick up all the pews and move them off every service.
Families can't handle this. We've got to get some cushions in here.
I really think that tradition becomes set when people have grown up their whole lives in a church. And for you, at your church, there would be some people that have grown up their whole lives for 20, 30 years in that church. But... for a church like ones that I've gone to, and even my church here in Mayfield, we have people here in Mayfield that have been attending the church for 70 years. Some of them for 80.
So good.
Some of them their whole lives, almost 90 years.
Yeah.
And things have always happened a certain way. You can't deviate in certain areas from the norm, even though we did run the church service at Mayfield and Stockton last week, and it was... we did things a little differently, but it was more of a modern take on things. I wanted to be respectful of the tradition, understanding that if it isn't an idol, if it's just the way you do things because it's the way you do things, it's not the way you do things because, well, that's the way they've always been done. It can't be done any other way.
Yeah.
If it works, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. For a lot of traditions, that's at least how they start out.
Mm.
And then if they ever get to the point where people are unwilling to embrace a change, a different way of doing things, because they are so reliant on that familiarity, that's the point where tradition becomes an idol. And that's the point where the ceremonial hand-washing of the Pharisees became a stumbling block for themselves.
Yeah. And that's where you see... I think a bit of fear get involved, and then I don't think this is often. I actually think it's less the case than people think it is, with these traditional churches and with people who have been attending it for a long time. But I saw a quote by, I think it was Andy Mineo. You can't stop me. You don't got the power. The other day, and it said, he doesn't think we're so much scared of change, but we're scared of loss. And I was like, whoa, that's pretty cool. Like, so I'm still thinking about that. I don't know quite what I think about it, but it was an interesting thought. Like, yeah, I guess I enjoy change, but I do in that moment. It's like, oh, something's going to disappear because we change what we're doing. There's something that we had before that we don't anymore, and so therefore I've lost it, and there's something in us that's like a little afraid of that. And I think I see that's probably one of the reasons people like to keep things the same, is because whether they want to admit it or not, there's a little bit of a fear, and then they're going to lose something in this that they thought was really good, and they don't want to miss that. And I mean, I think you also, like, more on that, like, as a 20-year-old, like, I've created a lot of memories in my life and things that have been really cool, and I want to keep doing those things because I'm like, whoa, this is really cool. Like, I really enjoy this, and I feel like maybe after 70 years, you have so many really great memories, and like, you know, maybe God spoke to, you know, this is hypothetical, but spoke to this woman in an amazing way, and she saw something really special through the scriptures or through a hymn that they sang, and it came through, and so she's begun over the years, it's now like, oh no, we need to do that way because I'm remembering this amazing time, and it happened, so it could happen again, or you know what I mean? Like, there's good memories attached to this tradition, and they don't necessarily want to change that because they quite like it.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that'd be in the same way that insanity is doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result, this is more like doing the same thing over and over, expecting the same result, because that is where you find your comfort.
Yeah.
And there is merit to that.
Definitely.
There's certainly some good things about tradition, and even I have different eyes now in going to this church here in Mayfield that I've been going to the last couple of years than I did growing up, when we didn't have to go to the traditional service. We would absolutely hate it. It was just old people and it was boring, and there were uncomfortable pews that had cushions to make you feel like they were comfortable but they weren't. And
as a kid, you can't see past that, though. You don't have, you're unable to go, oh, but this is, you know, this is a higher purpose than it's tough for me, but it's actually great for them. Like, you don't see that.
Yeah.
When you're older, and that's what you're saying and what you're about to say is like, but now I see it and I go, no, I understand why this is this way and I like this.
Yeah, you totally just stole my thunder. That's fine. Yeah.
Sorry.
With going to this church now, I see the beauty, I see the value in what these people do, and I love that they do it that way.
Yeah.
And I think really it comes down to, do I love the person? And if the person enjoys doing things that way, then for their sake, I'm going to enjoy doing things that way as well.
Yeah.
And I'm not in a position to change anything, but even my pastor, who started here in August, he's in his 80s, and he came in with this fresh vision for the church. He said, we're going to see the Sunday school and the youth group, everything back up and running again, and we're going to have some modern choruses. Ryan is going to lead some modern choruses. Okay. Yeah, thanks, Pastor Bob. That's fine. And so then we started singing these modern choruses, which are from the 50s, and it's
a stepping stone.
Yeah, that's right.
Do the 60s next year, and then...
that's right. In 5 years' time, we'll finally hit Reuben Morgan and Chris Tomlin. It's exciting seeing some change.
Yeah.
And even though there's resistance always at first, if things have always been done a certain way, if there is something to be improved or done differently that brings about a slightly better result, or even a different result that is still just as beneficial, there's always resistance at first.
Yeah.
There's always resistance to change. But when it comes to bringing these new things in, once they've been trialed and people can understand them, I think that's really what it comes down to. They don't understand this new idea, but as soon as they've seen it happen and they've been part of it,
oh, I get this.
Yeah. So then the first time that I played music at my church here before the service began, some people showed up and went, oh, these are songs we don't know. I don't really enjoy this because I want to be able to sing along and I don't know the songs. Then the next time, I had a slide projector and we had the words on the screen while I was singing them, and they started getting more comfortable with the idea that maybe there won't be the organ playing when they first walk into the church on a Sunday morning. And it got to the point where I've been leading some songs during the service that were written by Keith Green and people in the 70s
Keith Green,
and 80s.
I
love Keith Green as well. And so when it comes right down to tradition, I think normally, at least with the modern Christian, walking into a traditional church, we would see things that are not us. We'd see the pastor get up there and they have sung liturgy, or they have ceremonies that they do a very particular way. And yeah, it looks cool. I mean, it looks kind of quaint, but when it comes down to, do we engage that way? No, we don't. We're going to be resistant to that because that is change to us. And we can often, at least I found in my own heart, going to something like that, I see things done a certain way and I think, Pharisee. This is the spirit of religion. It's not the spirit of God working through religion. And that's, maybe sometimes that's right.
Maybe sometimes, yeah.
But really, that's my own judgment more often than not, it is, it's just the way they do things, and God really enjoys it.
Yeah.
So even with tying this into the Pharisees before we move on to our next topic, when Jesus showed up, he went to synagogues his whole life.
Yeah.
So he was very familiar with the Pharisaical ways and these particular traditions that they would do, and I'm sure he even received some kind of training in some kind of...
it was called a rabbi, so...
Yeah, that's right. You'd expect that he had at least something to do with the inner workings of the synagogue.
Yeah.
When he went to that particular old mate's house and they did the ceremony of hand washing, and they said, Jesus, your disciples didn't do this, they're just eating, surely that is that's sinful, something like that. He said, it's what comes out of you that makes you unclean,
not what
goes into you. And so I think that was really the heart behind Jesus' confrontation with the Pharisees. It wasn't that he said doing things a particular way to the point where you're obeying the law is wrong. It was doing things a particular way and refusing anybody that doesn't do them that way is wrong.
Yeah.
I think that was really it was a heart attitude of the Pharisees. It was the pride in their own holiness. And there's often pride that comes with tradition. Sometimes it's good pride and sometimes it's not. It just depends on how you relate it to other people.
And I think there's a lot of pride in the people that call themselves not traditional.
Totally.
Yeah, we have the issue. And so, yes, I agree that there is... we see, that might be a little pharisaical. They're being prideful, and it's like, wait... maybe I'm the one that's being prideful because I think that my way's better. Like, who told me my way's better?
Yeah.
God didn't say, worship me exactly this way and only ever this way. Like, he had guidelines put down in the Old Testament, but you look at the New Testament and living in the freedom of, you know, of Christ, it looks a bit different. And it's fellowship that is the important thing. And you know, there is different, you know, what do you call them, sacraments that are important. But the sacraments themselves, that's the tradition that's good. But I think the way that you do them can be variable. And nothing, he didn't say, do it exactly this way. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's the heart, it's what's coming out.
Yeah.
What I think about.
Interestingly,
being
in YWAM and... being among a lot of people that come from either non-denominational or
non-denominational denomination.
That's right. It's the most ironic title.
Bless them.
Or often these days, at least charismatic evangelical.
Yeah.
I'm going to go on record saying, sadly, even most commonly Pentecostal. Nothing against Pentecostalism.
You just want more variety.
Yes.
You want more variety.
I do want more variety. And there was a time in YWAM, especially in Australia, where a lot of people came from traditional backgrounds. And I know that there are people out there that are turned off YWAM because they see it as this Pentecostal thing. That you have to be either Assemblies of God or some other... Hillsong related, Bethel related, whatever type of movement. You need to be some of the movers and shakers, the people that laugh during worship and raise their hands and dance and flag and all that crazy stuff. You need to be that, or you need to at least embrace that to be in YWAM. And that was never how it was. It's just this new generation that has grown up with this trendy Christianity that sees that stuff as more exciting, so we're going to embrace that a little more. And there's more those people that come into YWAM, and I love that. And I want to see more people to balance that out from the other end of the spectrum, who have more of a word heavy faith, that maybe aren't as charismatic in certain regards, or at least come from that background, knowing that an interdenominational environment is where you learn from other places. It's definitely members of the body coming together, parts of the body working together. And I really want to see a lot of people that grow up in tradition in missions again.
Yeah.
And not just traditional missions, Lord, but even modern missions. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of different things that people bring to the table, what do you think about that? I guess it's almost a tradition within Pentecostal movements of speaking to the speaker while he's speaking.
Mr. Speaker!
And affirming his good sermon and things like that. What do you think about that?
It's good. It's so good.
Yeah, mate.
Come on.
Come on.
honestly, not growing up with that, growing up in a denomination where everyone was quite reverent during the service, when the preacher is speaking, you are not making any comments, you're not letting him know that he is doing a good job, other than maybe a wink from an old man in the congregation, or a nod, or in some cases even taking notes, that type of thing. People listen when you're up there. They're not the ones speaking from the pews, from the congregation, from the crowd. But when I was 18, I did attend a Pentecostal church of an evening in Canberra for about 6 months or so.
Yeah,
and I didn't actually, in hindsight, I can tell I didn't actually want to be there, because I didn't connect with anybody after the service. I just went there to be filled up and then went home. And that wasn't that's not the reason to go to church.
Yeah.
You go to church for fellowship, and I went there for the worship and the word, and then just use that on my own. I just hadn't discovered podcasts yet, I suppose. So when I was there, I was really thrown off when the preacher's giving delivering a message, and then people in the congregation are going, "It's good, so good,
come on,
yep, come on, good word."
Come on.
After everything he says, I couldn't handle it. I got distracted by these
comments. Is he going to say something? Why is he talking to this?
That's right. Oh, that guy over there sounds like Leighton Hewitt. And I look over there, and
it's like a middle-aged woman or something.
That's right. I'm quite an auditory person.
Yeah,
that's why I'm into podcasts. When I hear something that I want to identify, I look.
You focus on it.
Yeah, that's right. I shift my focus from what I should be listening to looking at that person over there with the glasses. Who's just called out during the middle of a sermon.
She's like, wait, is this like positive heckling or something? It's like good heckling.
That's kind of what it feels like.
I want to just, okay, that's one thing I'd like to hear more, is like more like a negative thing during, like, the preacher says something and you like kind of not sure about it, and you're like, oh, I don't know, mate. But like, it's just like, because like, if you're going to go that route of being like, okay, I'm going to like kind of interact a lot more and be like, yeah, that's good. Like, because like, I would sort of feel like, you know, for me, I actually do say it a bit. I'll be like, yeah, come on. And I say it to them, I guess, I want to encourage them a little bit, but I also want to be like, yes, I'm engaged. It's engaging my mind and going, yeah, good. I never did it growing up because we didn't do it in our church.
Yeah.
But coming to YWAM and people doing a bit more, I'm like, oh, I kind of like this. Like, I like letting the preacher know through more than just a nod that, like, oh, this is good. And also, if you really like a thing they're talking about, if you say enough, yeah, good, they'll elaborate it on it more. Well, that's at least what I think they'll do. So,
tell me more, tell me more.
I'm trying to manipulate the preacher.
It's like a cue.
Yeah.
It's an elaborate, please elaborate cue.
Yeah, because I feel like if I was the preacher, and I get it a little bit when I'm you know, I'm talking or giving a word or something at some thing we're doing at YWAM or whatever, and like, I feel like if a bunch of people, like, I say something and they all respond like, oh,
tell me more, tell me more,
yeah, good, then I want to like run with that, because I'm like, okay, obviously the Spirit's actually speaking to these people right now, or like, I'd like to hope so. They're not just saying it just because, or saying it to make me feel good. Like, I would hope that would be like, oh, whoa, and then that goes, okay, sweet, well, I actually have some more on this, so I want to share this. And it's like, so maybe there is a bit of that.
So it's kind of like testing the waters, seeing which thing is more responded to. Yeah, I understand that. There was one time a couple of years back in Melbourne, I went to the National Leaders Meeting of YWAM in Australia It was in November. I was on my School of Music admissions. We were helping to lead worship that week. And the Compassion BTS from Wyoming Newcastle came with us. Todd White, who is pretty well known in charismatic evangelicalism,
he's cool
these days.
I like
he's
him.
Associated with Bethel Church and with the Darren Wilson films and stuff. Quite a well-known evangelist.
Yeah, healing evangelist. Was what he was.
He's a great guy.
Oh,
he's so
cool.
Down to earth.
After the Lord.
Yeah, and so it's funny. He actually got up there for the sound check. He did a beatbox. He said,
classic.
Just, could I have a little more bass? Bass, bass, bass. Here we go. But there was this one person that was there. I don't know if they were YWAM alumni or whether or not they were DTS student on one of the DTSs that was there.
You don't know the name or anything.
No, and I think I only looked at them once or twice. But there was this girl that would always sit over on the side. And anytime Todd White would say anything, she would...
For glory.
From wherever she was, would just call out, "Come on! So good! It's good, Todd! Come on! So good!" It'd only be one of those things, usually. But the frequency at which they occurred was so distracting.
It's maddening.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
But it wasn't just me.
Yeah.
What I've found in YWAM is that when a speaker is really saying something profound or really challenging...
You really shut up.
People shut up and they soak it in. But... In this particular situation, everyone was doing that in the room, but this lady, who would constantly call that, "So good! Come on! Keep it up, Todd! Good word!" And all he was talking about was going to the gym that morning. It got to the point where on the final day of Todd speaking, somebody was sitting near her, and she called it out again, "Come on! So good!" And this person turns to her and says, "Shut up!" And all of us looked at each other and we went, "Oh, she just got told to shut up." And then we all silently went, "Come on." I have mixed opinions on it, and I honestly feel like there's a time and a place for them. If something is really relevant to you, and like you said, you want to let the speaker know, "This is speaking to me," saying a "come on" or a "so good" or a "keep it up, Todd" is fine.
Yeah.
But After everything,
maybe not.
It just got to the point where it was distracting for everyone, and it was taking their focus off of where we should be focusing. And so that's kind of my experience with it.
I think I'm just thinking about like one that I hear a lot is like people will be like and it's like, oh, it's like a little constipated or something. It's like, I don't know what it is, but I was thinking about it, and I go, oh, like, when you're in a one-on-one conversation with someone and they're talking and you let them know that you know what they're talking about, you're like, like just what you said there.
So I need to do this for podcasting
mentally,
too, otherwise it's just one person talking.
Yeah,
I need to keep going and this is for the listeners' sake. I do that so they know Ryan hasn't just tuned out completely. Jordan show. This is Ryan's still here, the host is still around. And it's particularly more important in a podcast setting where you can't see the nod.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just thinking, oh, that's a one-on-one. Maybe we're just trying to be a bit more one-on-one with our speaker. This is actually a positive thing that I think about this whole thing. It was like a month ago. We had a speaker at our weekly open meeting, or we call it a public meeting, on a Wednesday night for Wyoming down at our warehouse. And
a little shameless plug.
You should come. And the speaker was speaking, and they were like on fire, you know, when they're just like smashing it out, and you're all just sitting in your seat, we're just like, whoa, like this is really good. And so there was a bit of, oh, come on, like, yes, yes, and like a bit of clapping and stuff, like people get to, and there's like, whoa, Jesus, you know. And then like he said something, and it was super profound, and we'd already been like, it already said something that was like really awesome, and we were like, oh yeah, yeah. And he said this, and we all, as like, there was like a bunch of us, I'm not gonna say all, there's probably like five or six of us, that it was one man, we're like, ooh. And it was just like, you know when someone gets burnt really bad in like an argument, they're just like, and everyone else just like, oh, burn, oh.
Yeah.
It was just like that, but we were just like hit by the spirit. We were just like, ooh. And then afterwards I'm like, I've never heard that in a sermon. Someone said something and we were just like, ooh.
Sound like Wreck-It Ralph.
It was good. And I think it was encouraging to the speaker.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, let's move on to the next topic. Let's turn the page. We're going to be talking about random things, which is...
Get away from the... The apes are trying to get my food.
Oh my goodness.
We have snacks, but...
Yeah, the apes, they want it all. Talking about random things. So the fact that we're talking about this makes it a little meta, but... I know that you are somebody that is really good about talking about random things.
On my good days, yeah.
On your good days.
My bad days, I have 3 things I talk about.
Yeah, okay. But
anyway, yes, random things.
Fair enough. You're a pretty adaptable person, particularly in conversation. And I would like to venture the claim that the Winslades are quite good at that type of thing as well.
I think so.
We
think so too.
Yeah, I mean, from my own understanding, we can come up with crazy, bizarre story, bounce off each other.
Yeah.
Just have banter about anything that somebody brings to a conversation, and we can often confuse people very quickly by doing that. There is a certain type of person that can talk about anything at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
And then there is everyone else who might be thrown off balance for a few seconds trying to understand where that question came from or why we're talking about...
The airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow.
I guess it would be the more linear thinkers who think 1 plus 2 equals 3.
Yeah.
Or we're more like 1 plus 2 equals 12. Like, mathematically, it doesn't make sense, but in our heads, we see that. We see 1 plus 2, and we're like, oh, if you put 1 and 2 together, it equals 12. That's cool.
So it's more like the creative thinkers versus the logical thinkers.
Yeah, I think of it as divergent versus...
Yeah, all right.
Not convergent. Just linear versus divergent is how I think of it in my head.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So we can learn a thing or two from Triss and 4. So in this divergent way of going about conversation, there are... definitely benefits. I would say it's more entertaining.
Oh, I love
us, for sure. And then there are other people that are perhaps listening to this podcast that think, okay, why are they talking about this now? Oh, that was a random story to throw in there. It didn't really relate to things. For them, it can get confusing. And maybe there isn't much to this topic at all in regards to what we can talk about it. But... I think it's really interesting to consider the ability to talk about anything at the drop of a hat, and to have someone say, for the next minute, you need to talk about why having blue skin would be better than having whatever other pigmentation you have.
So this is getting even deeper. This is like defending something that you don't necessarily believe in as well, which is cool.
Yes.
Because, like, personally, I'm a big fan of...
of blue skin.
Of... yes. I don't actually really like blue skin, but I can defend blue skin if you wish me to. I think blue skin is really cool because it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking of Avatar right now. Is that why you're thinking of blue skin?
Well, I was actually thinking of the Twi'lek species from Star Wars.
Star Wars, really?
Yeah.
Speaking of Star Wars, there we go. See, I just jumped to another random topic.
And now all of a sudden we're talking about Lego Star Wars. And a second ago we weren't.
If you just listen to that thing, it seems random, but I'm just noticing there's actually a pathway. Mm-hmm. Because it's triggers in your mind. Because I heard you mentioned... I said blue Avatar, you said Twi'lek, which is also alien, and then it was like Twi'lek, and I'm like Twi'lek, Star Wars, and then you're like Star Wars, Lego Star Wars. So there is, I guess you could say there's a linear thing, but it happens so quickly that if you're a linear thinker, you tend to be more methodical, which takes a bit more time, and you might miss that.
And you're more consciously considering the step from one topic to the next, whereas for divergent thing is it's more like a wiki race where you're on Wikipedia and you have to get from you have to get from something like Marilyn Monroe's page to the page for rubber duckies only through clicking on the links, and so you're just finding that link to the next topic that'll link to that and to that and to that. And but for divergent thinkers that all happens subconsciously often, and so there may be something that was mentioned 2 minutes ago in the conversation that you've been mulling over without realizing, then all of a sudden that sparks something. Oh, I want to talk about this now. And it kind of relates, I'm sure if we really thought about it, it would relate, but on the top of my head, I can't really comprehend how that did. And even when it came to me trying to think of a random topic, blue skin better than whatever pigmentation you have, that's a little weird, but there is a blue bedsheet on this mattress that is next to us in this treetop canopy, ape-infested jungle house.
Yeah, apes like beds.
That's right. So there are definitely triggers, and I think a lot of them are subconscious. And I think it's also a matter of, it could even come into the willingness to embrace change, like in regards to the tradition that we're talking about. If you are typically more resistant to things being a little unexpected, then I think you would be less likely to have the ability to talk about random topics.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, Fee, I'm very adaptable. I love change. I get bored of the same thing. Mm. So that's another thing as a topic. I kind of start getting bored of a topic after. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's super interesting to me and I'm passionate about it, I could probably do half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe an hour if there was like a really interesting conversation. Mm-hmm. But within that conversation, it probably would have gone on to a few other things within, like side topics within that topic.
And then you probably finish somewhere that you didn't expect to finish.
Yeah.
Which is why you need someone like me on this podcast who can bring it all back to...
Bring it all back to you.
To wherever we're supposed to be going. So, with that said, I think that was a really interesting, perhaps thought-provoking, a little psychological... speculation happening.
I've been thinking about it all night.
Yeah. Come on. Well, we're gonna transition now, turn the page into the final topic that we're going to talk about, and that is thinking about nothing. And I'm sure this will be a quick topic, unless we get lost in our nothing box. This is usually attributed to men, the ability to think about nothing. Mm. And I even had this conversation last week with a couple of girls. They were talking about how even when they're not thinking about anything, they're thinking about things.
Mm.
So if they're not focusing their thoughts, they can still identify, I'm thinking about what I'm going to wear tomorrow morning. Or I'm thinking about the next meal that I'm going to have. Or I'm thinking about maybe what I'm going to do later on tonight, that type of thing. But for us, and for some women as well, this isn't a strictly gender thing, and I'm sure there are men that don't have a nothing box.
Yeah.
We have this ability to tune everything out. Like in movies and cartoons where everything goes quiet and you're just hearing... thoughts inside somebody's head, or nothing at all, and all of a sudden the sound washes back in and somebody's just asked them a question, they have no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
We have that ability, I think. What are your thoughts on the nothing box?
I like
it. Do you have no thoughts on thinking about nothing?
I actually have thoughts about thinking about nothing, because I've discovered it happens quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that it normally happens when I have an object to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I consider it thinking about nothing, but I'll be like, I'll be looking at something and I'll observe that it's there, but that's all. Like, it'll just be like, it's there. Like, I'm not thinking about it. It's green, but I'm not thinking, oh, it's green. It's just like, it's green. I'm registering in my head, this is happening. And I realized the misunderstanding is another guy probably would notice that and be like, oh, he's got that bacon stare, he's not thinking about that. But a girl would be probably thinking about stuff at that point. And so she's looking at me and goes, he's staring, why is he staring?
Yes, that's right.
Do I look bad? Do I?
Yeah.
And it keeps going like that. Well, really, I'm just like, good morning, world.
It's the the overthinking versus the unthinking.
I was thinking, overthinking. Because there's just too many scenarios.
It really is that vacancy, and it's honestly a sweet release at times.
Ding ding, no one's home.
Yeah. Kind of less of a waltz and midi thing. If you're a female out there and you're wondering is it kind of like in Secret Life of Walter Mitty, Ben Stiller's portrayal, where he just zones out and then imagines this other scenario? It's more like there's nothing there. You just register that something's happening and...
It doesn't go any further than that. You have no thoughts on the fact that something's happening.
Yeah. Right, well, I hope that's given you something or nothing to think about. This has been another episode of Pastor's Middle Kid. Remember to follow me on social media, facebook.com/Pastor's Middle Kid or Twitter at PMK Podcast. Love to hear from you. And yeah, if you have any questions that you would like for myself and a guest or even just me to answer, then send them through to ryan.luke.winslade@gmail.com and I'd love to give them a go. Might even have a segment, an Ask Ryan Luke Anything segment, or Ask Ryan Luke Some Things That He Feels Comfortable Answering On Air segment. That'd be great. And yeah, until next time, I have been Ryan Luke, and this is Jordan Smith, and this is the Tree Top Canopy Jungle House
Studio.
Over and out.